There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 774, November 5th, 2018. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say buenos dias and happy Cinco de Championship. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando goes NASCAR. Red Bull and Honda say they're in love. Does Bottas win in Brazil? And on this episode, we have a new Tech Talk with Tim. I also want to remind everybody that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. And of course, thanks to everybody who's contributed, anything over $100 gets an F1 Weekly mug. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. The long-awaited championship is over now. We are now looking forward, like you said, to Bottas winning a Grand Prix this year.
Exactly. We're going to have the Rubinho-Schumacher ordeal all over again.
And Nando is going to drive a stock car of all the places in Bahrain, is that correct?
In Bahrain, in a Chevrolet.
Whatever happened to Bristol, Tennessee?
Bristol, Tennessee is busy with the smoke.
Half-mile track is very busy?
Yes.
Very good, very good. You know, it's interesting, watching the Mexican Grand Prix, Red Bull gave wings to Sebastian Vettel to fly to four straight championships. But in Mexico, they clipped his wings. He not only failed to win the race against the guy who pushed him aside at this track last year, but also failed to capture, or I should say, lost in capturing the big picture. And what a fantastic start we had. Lewis Hamilton, man, I thought this was like going for his first ever Grand Prix win. He had a killer start. And as soon as Max barged ahead, I just knew dishes were done for Sebastian Vettel.
Yes, dishes were done for Sebastian Vettel at Monza.
Yes, yes. That was very sad, but the final serving, the dessert, flan, was served in Mexico City by Max, not Lewis.
No doubt. And the in-flight burrito was frozen.
Oh, yes. I think it's now thawing by Toto, so Mr. Bottas can enjoy. But did you enjoy the Mexican Grand Prix, sir?
I liked it. It was fun. I mean, you know, it was anticlimactic for me, but I was happy that Max got a win, a repeat win for such a young man. He's already repeating wins.
Yes, he now has 5 Grand Prix wins, but still without a pole position. And on Saturday, he almost became the youngest pole sitter, but teammate Danny Wick delivered a dingo bike late in Cali and grabbed numero uno spot on the starting grid. And later after the race, you know, I heard Max said that he was so pissed off, not only losing the pole position slot, because he now has like just a few more months left to dethrone Sebastian Vettel as the youngest pole sitter. And with the races coming in Abu Dhabi, where there will be no rain, in Brazil, where there may be rain, you know, he has a little bit of chance to make more history there. But he was also pissed off at the celebration of Danny Rick, and he even said he only slept like 3 hours.
Well, when you're that young, you could do that.
That is very true. Did you like the start that Lewis Hamilton made?
I thought it was fine, you know. I'm not an LCH fan. I don't know if you picked up on that yet.
No, I thought you only liked him and Nando.
I like Nando.
What's your beef with LCH?
Annoying.
Annoying?
Essay.
Well, to each his own.
I know.
LCH did not do a kamikaze move on the kid, and this was far cry from the start of the... I was watching the start of the 2007 Brazilian Grand Prix a few weeks ago, And that race, you know, Lewis had a Greenspan moment of youthful and irrational exuberance, which cost him the world title in his rookie season. And of course, the big gap of 70 points before the Mexican Grand Prix basically deflated the balloon of excitement we had. It was just a matter of doing the race. And I had a very strong feeling Max or Danny Rick was going to win, because they were saying that the loss of power is like 22% because of thin air at the altitude of the Autódromo Hermanos Rodríguez. So it's sad, you know, what happened to Daniel Ricciardo, but, you know, we're still happy that Max got another win. And this was his first, like you say, a repeat win.
And the interesting thing, Christian Horner actually thanked Renault.
Are you sure he did that?
Yeah, it could have been fake news, but that's what I read.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, Max does all the crying about Renault engines, but his teardrops seem to fall on Ricciardo's car. And as Christian Horner said at the U.S. Grand Prix, I am sure he will have a word with his future employer. So they are not missing on any opportunity to backstab or drive a Greyhound over Renault.
Oh, yeah. And trust me, it'll continue next year.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like you said, romance between Honda and Red Bull, there is a lot of chatter from Mr. Horner and Dr. Marco about their growing romance and relationship with Honda. But if you look at the performance band of Honda, Power, Toro Rosso, add the 6-10th. We haven't talked about the 6-10th in a long time, from the talent of Max and then some from an Adrian Newey-designed car. On paper, it looks like we may have more than just Ferrari next season to try and topple Mercedes from the top of the F1 totem pole. And Dr. Marco is already talking about making Max Verstappen the youngest world champion. I have a feeling that they will be very competitive, but I just cannot see Red Bull and Honda winning the championship in their first year. What do you think?
Well, I don't even think Ferrari has a chance of winning against Mercedes next year. And it finally came out. Vettel said it. He said it. He confirmed my theory of relativity that Ferrari was never dominant. They were never in contention. It was all fake news.
Well, if you look at the first 8 races,
it'll
be hard to believe.
It's not hard to believe if Mercedes has turned the knob down. Trust me, these people are so manipulative. Don't be so naive. They all know it's a show. They don't want people to hate Mercedes. They remember when Ferrari and Schumacher were dominating and the numbers started going down. I'm telling you, these people are intelligent people and they're manipulating the whole thing. Bravo.
Wow.
Isn't it great? But it's true. I mean, I felt so much better when Vettel said we really were never in contention. And that's going to happen next year. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, Red Bull's goal is not to beat Mercedes. Christian Horner is there in the pits. He knows what's going on. Their goal is to beat Ferrari next year. If they could beat Ferrari next year, then they'll be in contention. Unfortunately, we have a redesign in 2021. Everything starts over again. What can I say? I shake everybody up and we wake up from that horrible dream.
I have a feeling you are now fully qualified to start your own political party.
I have, and you're going to hear a sucking sound going south.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Now, talking of Mercedes thingy that you said, I have a feeling that Lewis and Mercedes will be very hard to beat in 2019. And when you add Esteban Ocon as the new wingman for 2020 or 2020, we may see reverse cage rattling at Mercedes finally. And talking of cage rattling, we may see that happen at Ferrari before the 2019 season starts. I am sure Charles Leclerc would like to stamp his authority as the main stud of Scuderia. I would like to think there is a lot of fight and talent left in Vettel after all these years, but the new mistress always has the eyes and ears of the rich man who writes the checks, and you should know that. The last thing I want to see is another great champion becoming victim of his own moves and mistakes.
Bravo.
What do you think of the new signing at Ferrari? Do you think there'll be some helter-skelter at Ferrari next year?
It's guaranteed. And the reason is, you know, and Arriva Bene talks about how they need to get used to winning. Well, the problem is you need to get used to not eating the marinara sauce. You got to move on from that. Ferrari is going to be in a conundrum in 2019 with a new young driver, a car that's still not quite there, and the frustration from Vettel is going to boil over. You think we saw mistakes from Vettel this year? Ha! Wait till next year with a young gun next to him. It's not Kimi Raikkonen anymore. Kimi Raikkonen is a professional, stays out of the way, does his job, and goes home. We've got Leclerc coming in who wants to put his stamp of authority. And it's going to cause trouble in River City. And trouble starts with a T, rhymes with P, and stands for pool.
No, I have to say that I do expect some serious cage rattling, if not in the early part, in the second half of the season. And I do expect Charles Leclerc do to Sebastian what Lewis did to you know who. And talking of who, Nando, the question is, why is this man putting himself through misery at every race this weekend? I don't get it. I really don't get it. He has more money than he needs. He's got two of the three Triple Crowns. I think he should cut his F1 career losses and move to Southern California to hang out with his ex-McLaren teammate Jenson Button. Perhaps living 99 miles from L.A. will give him the fun and good times he cannot find driving race cars with GP2 and World Series by Renault engines. It is really sad to see his misery. I hope Zach Brown takes him out for some fine belly dancing when the party is over in Abu Dhabi next month. You have some thoughts on your Dios going out into after two races?
Yeah, I mean, it's over. You know, I wish he would actually just let the younger reserve driver take over and, like you said, visit the palatial studios of F1 Weekly.
Yeah, that would be nice. You know, I asked one of the journalists, Mark Hughes, a very well-known journalist with Motorsport Magazine, if he will miss Nando, and he said, yes, I will. And I asked him why. And he started listing, his racing moves and race wins. And I asked him which one really stands out for you. There were quite a few. And he said the pass at Suzuka on the outside of Mr. Michael Schumacher. So there will be some, not some, but quite a few good memories left by Muy Macho Hombre de España.
Oh, yeah. And the book will come out, the tell-all, telling the truth about what's really going on in Formula One.
What is the truth that you would like to know from him?
The manipulation, the trickery, the treachery, the evil.
Man, you want to hear something that I heard at Austin?
Please.
Talking of Nando, I asked a journalist, very experienced journalist, what the pool of journalists think what happened at Singapore, okay? And he said something to which I responded, and he says, no, this is what happened. What he said, it all started out with Nelson Piquet Sr. making a comment that we can do something like that, which was followed by Flavio asking Pat Simmons if something like this can be done. He looked into it, and according to this gentleman, what had happened is Nelson Piquet Jr. was supposed to not crash so heavily because, it was a very high-speed accident. If you look at that, the right side of the car was completely destroyed. Basically, the idea was to scrape the wall and kind of like stop the car there. And I said to him that when this thing happened or when it came out, I remember Nelson Piquet Jr. making a comment that when Flavio and Pat Simmons brought this to his attention, this idea, he wanted to call his dad in Brazil and it was too late and all that kind of stuff. And this journalist says, no, Nelson Piquet Sr. was there. So again, this is one gentleman saying, and I don't know what the truth is, but That's one of the truth I would like to know from Nando in his book, if he will address this issue. And the other is, how many times has this physio done the countdown during a pit stop? That's what I really want to know.
It's all coming out, Ness.
You know that physio is with him at all the races?
I know.
I met him some years ago at Austin.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say hello to him, but I said, let me do a countdown first before I said hola.
That's a good idea. That's what he likes, countdowns.
Yes. And you know, misery loves company. Then we have the case of another sad case of Stoffel Vandoorne, who is now going to Mercedes in Formula E. He was in the points in Texas. And what a relief for the young man after receiving the Isaac Hayes CD on the Zac Brown label.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? You're damn right.
And on another musical note, Mr. Brandon Hartley is about to receive the Achy Breaky Heart CD from Franz Tost.
Don't tell my heart, my achy breaky heart, I just don't think he'd understand.
And I have to say, it has to be a lousy feeling for any driver to have a contract with the team and they are openly shopping his replacement. Now, in Mexico, I'm sure you went saw this. There was a statement from Hartley and Tost contradicting each other. And we all know what happens when you fight City Hall. The paddock talk is Hartley will be replaced by Alexander Albon, who has done a great job in Formula 2 this year. He had already signed a three-year deal with Nissan Formula E team. And apparently, Dr. Marco is now working to detangle the wire.
Very exciting.
Anything else you liked in Mexico City?
Nothing, except for the chimichangas and the churros.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk of weather playing a part, but I did not see much of Mexican rain there.
See, you can't talk about the Mexican rain.
Anything stood out for you in the Mexican Grand Prix? Any performance, anything?
Nothing. Absolutely zero, except for Fernando didn't win.
Well, he's going to win a lot of races in sports cars.
And in the camper truck series?
Yes.
Yep, we've come a long way, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
You know what? Now that I'm just out of breath and suffering, why don't we hear that new episode of Tech Talk with Tim?
Welcome, listeners, to this 25th episode of Tech Time with Tim. Last time, I put out a request for you, the listeners, to write in with your favorite F1 racing inventions, and I'm very thankful for the many ideas you've supplied. Some honorable mentions are the anti-lock brakes and traction control that weren't necessarily invented by F1 engineers, but were greatly improved upon in the sport. And some cars which I think are outstanding in their technical and aesthetic uniqueness, but which won't be discussed today are the six-wheeled Tyrrell P34 and the Brabham BT46B, which used a fan at the back of the car to create a vacuum underneath for outstanding road grip regardless of car speed. So I encourage you to look these up, or I may speak about them in future episodes. So now let's get to your suggestions. First off, David Guidolin writes in stating his favorite racing invention was the creation of carbon fiber. Certainly this has been a game changer, not only in motorsports, but in the engineering world in general. The first carbon fiber chassis was used in McLaren's MP41 in 1981, developed by John Barnard. Today, carbon fiber is famous for its high strength to weight ratio, but in the early 80s, the concept was revolutionary. Working with carbon fiber is not easy. Unlike metal, a sheet of carbon fiber doesn't have the same structural properties in every direction. The forces on the car must be predicted so that the weaves of carbon fiber are deposited to provide strength where it's needed and not excess weight where that strength is not needed. Also, unlike metal, carbon fiber cannot have holes tapped into it to install bolts. And carbon fiber requires an entirely new set of assembly hardware. Traditional machine tools like mills and lathes are replaced by molds and ovens. So overcoming all of these challenges to produce a safe racing car is as impressive as the carbon fiber material itself. Lauren Chu writes in suggesting the flappy paddle gearbox. This transmission design has several advantages, both in simplifying the role of the driver and in performing a function better than a driver ever could. Sequential gearbox designs were experimented with for years, but it wasn't until Ferrari implemented the concept in 1989 that the new technology appeared in racing. Interestingly, this was also achieved by John Barnard, who had moved from McLaren to Ferrari in 1987. Previously, gear shifting was done with the driver using a shift knob, forcing the driver to take one hand off the wheel, many times in mid-turn, to shift gears. Not only did the sequential gearbox design allow the driver to keep two hands on the wheel at all times, but over the years, the paddle shift design and the engine hydraulics commanded by the paddles have reduced engine shift times to a fraction of a blink of an eye. Sequential gearboxes were also brought to road cars by Ferrari on the 355 model, which affectionately called the transmission option the F1 gearbox in 1997 when it came to market. Now we get to my favorite racing invention and the tie-in to car ride height that we've been discussing in the two previous episodes. And this idea was also requested by Adrian Bourbon as well. Active suspensions were pioneered in the 80s by Lotus and Williams, although initially they were of questionable benefit. The systems added weight and consumed engine power to drive hydraulic pumps. These pumps were linked to the car's suspensions, allowing the cars to be lifted or lowered at each of the four wheels independently. When a normal car would experience some roll in a turn, a car with active suspension could be lifted on the outside wheels and lowered on the inside wheels to keep the car level and always close to the ground, improving mechanical and aerodynamic grip. Conversely, the car could be lifted during the straights to reduce drag when downforce was not needed. This technology was implemented not only effectively, but in a dominant way, in 1992 by Williams under chief designer Adrian Newey. There are a combination of reasons that are thought to have driven the decision to ban active suspension for the 1994 season. First, active suspensions were driving up car costs and making it difficult for all teams to stay competitive. Second, the car's safety was in large part tied to the reliability of the suspension systems. Alex Zanardi suffered a crash in Spa after a leak in the suspension system caused the car to bottom out and lose control. And finally, although opinions differ, some saw this technology as a driver aid which put too large an emphasis on the programming of the car and less on the ability of the driver. So thank you everyone for your continued support, whether you wrote in an idea or have been a loyal listener. I had fun researching the history of these inventions, and I'm looking forward to seeing what crazy ideas get invented next in Formula One.
Tim, keep up the good work. The check is in the mail. That was pretty interesting, wasn't it, Nasser?
Yes, sir. My thanks to Tim also for taking the time to do it. You know, he's a busy young executive in SoCal. He's got a lot of things to do, and I appreciate very much him taking care of our technical side of our podcast.
Exactly.
Now we have a little tribute in motorsports mantra. May I proceed, sir?
Let me text. There it goes.
Oh, here it comes, his PDR. Please proceed. This is motorsports mantra. Schumacher, Fangio, Hamilton, an elite group of Grand Prix drivers who have won five or more championships. Lewis has come a long way from being champion of RC cars to a five-time Formula One world champion. It all started with watching Formula One on TV with his Pepito. A trip to Rye House karting track in England proved he was quick and a natural talent. As they say in racing, speed costs money, how fast you want to go. The Hamilton family answer was very fast, so fast that Papa Anthony had to work three jobs to keep young Lewis racing in karts. Then a call was made by Martin Hines, the grand guru of karting world, who had since departed, to a chap named Ron Dennis, running the McLaren-Mercedes team at the time. A deal was struck, stay in school and keep performing on the track, and we will take care of the rest. Both parties kept their end of the deal. Lewis was winning and winning in everything he was racing. He and Seb race against each other in Formula 3, and there's an interesting battle at one of the tracks in Germany that can be seen on YouTube between Seb and Lewis in Formula 3. It was in his rookie season in GP2 that Lewis really cleaned everyone's cuckoo clock. His pass on Nelson Piquet Jr. and I believe Adam Carroll at Silverstone is one for the ages, and that's in GP2. And so is the Turkish delight he delivered in Istanbul after a spin early in the race. It was at Monza in 2006 that Ron Dennis told Lewis Hamilton, "We will give you a chance next season." Podium in first nine races may be possible for a few other drivers in the best car. But rattling the cage of Ombre, who dethroned the Red Baron, is not for everyone. Perhaps only for those with max performance. F1 Weekly would like to congratulate Lewis Carl Hamilton, Toto and his Wolfpack at Petronas AMG Mercedes for an incredible season and an amazing achievement. You are the El Jefe of F1 Weekly. Sir, would you like to say some words on Lewis Hamilton winning five champions?
Yes, congratulations, Lewis. Keep up the good work, Toto. The manipulation was incredible.
Boy. I sense a lot of sour Spanish olives.
They're very sour.
Yes. Well, what they say, you have to sleep in the bed you make, and he did make his own futon at Suzuka some years ago.
I understand, Nasser. Let me wallow in my sour olives. And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse. Nothing in my purse and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse, how lovely it was.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And the globe is still spinning around Magdalena Michuca Park, where the Grand Prix circuit in Mexico City is located. So we're going to take a look at history of Mexico in Grand Prix racing, okay? Some famous drivers from there and some not so famous and some races. Anyway, Ricardo Rodriguez, brother of Pedro, made a sensational Grand Prix debut at Monza in 1961. Qualifying on front row, he died at the circuit now named in his brother's memory after a heavy crash in practice for a non-championship Mexican Grand Prix in the early 60s. Roger Penske was a driver in this race, believe it or not. Pedro Rodriguez, his brother, fondly remembered by his epic drive in the wet at Brands Hatch 1,000-kilometer sports car race in a Porsche. He became the first Mexican Grand Prix winner after his triumph at Kyalami in 1967, driving a Maserati engine coupe. Pedro was killed in a fiery crash at the Nürburgring sports car race, driving a Ferrari in 1971. And Nürburgring is the street circuit near Nuremberg, Germany. Moises Solana, this was another gentleman who was also friends with Joe Ramirez. He took part in a few F1 races, and the Solana Corner at the Mexico City circuit is named after him, and he was also killed in a motorsports accident. Now, have you heard this news that there are several drivers trying to get a seat, and one of the new names, the president that has come up is Esteban Gutierrez.
That's good.
He is one of the original F1 Weekly friends, along with Alexander Rossi. Now, then we have Sergio Perez, who really has done a great job based on opportunities given to him, courtesy of Carlos Slim. Checo, as he is known, did not have the stellar junior career like Esteban. In fact, Sergio did not succeed in any championship in Europe, as far as I can remember, but has made the most of his opportunity. Like I said, it's possible by support from Telmac. Really get his name by managing tires at Sauber, came very close to winning the Malaysian Grand Prix over Nando. Do you remember how good he was with tires at Sauber?
Yeah.
Okay, now we look at some famous Grand Prix races in Mexico. 1964, Jim Clark was set to win his second world championship when the season finale came to Mexico City. The engine was done blowed up late in the race. Graham Hill could have been a contender but his hopes were put in a spin by a tap from Ferrari Lorenzo Bandini. On the final lap, Bandini became boathouse of the day, the perfect wingman, and allowed his Ferrari teammate John Surtees into second place in the race, which translated into first place in the championship. Interestingly, Ferrari cars were not red in this race. They were white and blue in the colors of Luigi Canetti's North American racing team, and this was because of some dispute Enzo Ferrari was having with the Italian Automotive Commission or whatever it is. Okay, sir?
Very good.
Now we move to 1965. Historical day for Richie Ginther, Honda, and Goodyear. Maiden win for all in that race, which was very impressive. The 1970 race is best remembered for crowd control issues. And if you see some of the pictures of this race, you will not believe, man, there are guys, hundreds of them just standing, just sitting by the side of the track as the race is going on. 1986, Gerhard was a hot burger. Running nonstop on Pirelli tires, he scored his and Benetton's first Grand Prix win. Many years later in Germany, the same driver would give the same team the last Grand Prix win. And finally, Nigel Mansell's pass on Berger in 1990. It was, I think, on the second last lap. It's the biggest ballsy move ever in Formula One. And those who have not seen it, I would highly, highly recommend to check it out.
Exciting.
There you have it, sir.
Keep up the good work.
On a sad note, Mrs. Mary Hullman has passed away. For years and years, she used to give the command, gentlemen, start your engines. So this was a sad day and a big loss to motorsports, but she was up there in age. So our condolences to the Tony George and his family. And I will say this on a personal note, Clark. When I came to the U.S. in 1985, the 1985 Indy 500 was not live TV. And I remember listening to this race in my head, 1969 Lincoln Mercury Monterey. You know how big that boat is. And I remember Mrs. Hullman saying, gentlemen, start your engine. And it gave me like a serious, serious frisson moment. So another part of big American history has now departed.
I saw the news and it was very sad.
So you want to look back to the Brazilian Grand Prix and see what will happen there?
Well, I know what's going to happen.
What?
Bottas is going to win.
If it's dry.
If it's dry, but, you know, they have to throw Bottas a bone.
Yeah, Bottas will win this race or Abu Dhabi, but, man, I'm telling you, if it's raining, then it's going to be a big battle between LCH and Max.
Very true, but if it's really nice, we're going to see camping chairs.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, let me just tell you, I mean, I was listening to, you know, the Autosport magazine also has a, I don't know if they do it every day, but on a regular basis, like a 5-10 minute segment on YouTube. And the question was asked in one of the recent episodes, what will McLaren do if Max Verstappen wins the championship in 2019 with Honda power?
And what's the answer?
Well, the answer is not what you want to hear. Heads will roll. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but I think that it's going to be a good symbiosis between Red Bull and Honda simply because they've got a great chassis. McLaren didn't want to look in the mirror and see the acne and the pimples.
You know what? I've heard from a lot of sources, you know, technical people and people who know these things, is that part of the problem was is that McLaren basically designed a car and then told Honda, you need to fit your package the way this car is. And that created a lot of problems, especially with some of the packaging of, you know, all these things that go with the engine now with this hybrid power plant.
Exactly. I completely agree.
And apparently Red Bull is, you know, give us an engine that is quick and reliable and we'll, you know, fit the car somehow into the car. So, but I, you know, I have to agree with McLaren. They were with Honda for 3 years. Now, obviously, when they were talking about they'll be running in the top five, one had to think that giving a big resourceful company like Honda 3 years, I think they did what they had to do. I mean, you cannot blame them for not moving away from Honda. But boy, be careful what you wish for. Just might come true. And it is just a complete disaster. I mean, Red Bull, the team that's constantly pissing on the engine supplier, they are winning races with that engine.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's amazing.
It is amazing. But once again, look at what Williams is doing with the Mercedes engine.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Williams.
Everybody is.
Yeah, they cannot go on like this.
No, they need new leadership. Claire is not the one.
I think this day and age, you really cannot succeed without a big corporate manufacturer involved. Ron Dennis was right on that. I think what they should do is maybe bring back BMW or Toyota. They should really sell this team before it's too late. That's just my opinion.
Good for you, Nas. So your prediction for Brazil?
Rain, Max, dry, Bottas.
Brilliant. And I say Fernando on the sidelines playing with the cameras and the camping chairs.
Yes. I mean, I would like to see them take him out and put Lando Norris, see what he can do. Nobody can do anything. If Alonso cannot do anything with that car, nobody's going to do anything.
Well, then why don't we just put Milcaduno in there?
You know, that's not a bad idea.
I know. I'm thinking about good show, you know. Jolly good show.
He can put on a good show. Just ask Danica Patrick.
Exactly. And ask me. I interviewed Milka.
Yeah, I did too. We were there.
We were there together, holding hands.
It takes two guys to interview, to handle Milcaduno.
Well, you had to take one and I took the other.
Yeah.
Bravo. Nas, keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who puts up with us. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.